Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 45. The Clericos of Writing and Publishing. Clerk, clerical, have roots with of the clergy from ancient Greek clerical, clericos, and with the root kleros, kleros, meaning a lot, or that which is assigned by lot. It reminded me of St. Francis and his little portincula, the little paradise. The clerk aspect is kind of a caretaking of sacred texts in that way. To explore kind of balance to the creative inner child, free-flowing, spontaneous, artsy side with the more repetitive, mechanical, robotic part of one's craft. Can be part of the business side or managing the artist's self. Helps create a balance. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. Of the Greek root mentions the clerk as similar to secretary, scribe, mentions the tablet. So we have a sort of ancient sense of what writing could be done on stone or however, and a sense of records and delivering a message perhaps. And the roots also mention that which is drawn, the lines of a drawing or picture. So, you know, whether that's the alphabet, the letters, or the music notes, you get the sense of the building blocks of one's craft, and that, in a way, the artist is assembling and putting together those lines. So there's that creativity, again, balanced with the technical technical aspect of the actual letters, lines, whatever, what have you, images, music notes. So that's sort of a more artistic angle on it. And then there's also the more clerical, a little bit of interesting information from Wikipedia. First I'll say that, you know, modern times now, clerk has a kind of menial negative connotation. However, looking this stuff up on Wikipedia gave a whole new meaning to it. And it says, it is in this sense that the word entered the Arabic language, most commonly in Lebanon, from the French clerici, meaning seminarian. So, something to do with disseminating information. The term clerk derives from cleric, since in medieval times the clergy were one of the few groups who could read, and therefore were often employed to do bookkeeping and similar work. The term clerical work continues to this day to refer to such functions. So I'll add a note here in my interpretation: without the religious connotation of clergy, the artist or the scholar has a role as a spokesperson, a kind of literary medium, a record keeper, often caretaking of sacred texts. You don't even have to be an artist. You could just be someone who takes care of texts, to collect certain books, and has a certain a lot or certain topics that one is a kind of custodian of. And to continue on with the Wikipedia, a priesthood is a body of priests, shamans, or oracles who have a special authority or function. The term priest is derived from the Greek presbyter, elder or senior, but it is often used in the sense of sacerdos. I think that means sacred. In particular, i.e. for clergy performing ritual within the sphere of the sacred or numinous, communicating with the gods. In a medieval context, the word clerk meant scholar. Clerical workers are perhaps the largest occupational group in the United States. In 2004, there were 3.1 million general office clerks, 1.5 million office administrative supervisors, and 4.1 million secretaries. Clerical occupations often do not require a college degree, though some college education or 1 to 2 years in vocational programs are common qualifications. And it lists various types of clerks: data entry clerk, sales clerk, as in grocery sales, deli clerk, hotel front desk clerk, service desk clerk, cash register clerk. Personally, worked for a couple of years as an office clerk, which really was a great training as for the writing and publishing. Learned some basic computer skills and did a lot of data entry. As James Buchanan mentioned on the last show about journalism being a kind of boot camp, the discipline of this office clerk job was really a kind of boot camp for me. At certain times when I feel tired or don't feel like doing more writing, or whether it's clerical work, the job experience helps me just stay with it, because I remember, you know, on the job just spending hours doing sort of data, you know, artistically sort of boring, but, you know, necessary stuff. And that's kind of what I want the focus of the show to be, is how that the role that the clerical plays in helping yourself as an artist. And there's a bunch of aspects of that. Also, an end note there from Wikipedia: the surnames Clark, Clark with an E, Clerk, and Clerk with an E are derived from this occupation. That's interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, names like Baker and Smithy and stuff like that is more obvious. So it's not, don't consider this as a how-to. I'm just sharing some things that I have found useful, or find useful, things that help me stay organized. And it's very loose. I try to keep up with it. Sometimes I slack a bit, but, you know, maybe it'll trigger some ideas for yourself. Files, keeping files and records when you start off writing, and, you know, you send out your first poem or your manuscript, it almost seems meaningless to keep track of that. But, you know, as the years go on, all of a sudden it's sort of learning in a learning curve way. All of a sudden it adds up. So good suggestion, you know, start off with some kind of files, dates, keeping track of things. in whatever way you do, when you're submitting poems or whatever it is to a magazine or to wherever, you know, keep the date, the title of the poem, the magazine you are sending it to, and perhaps some contact information. And, you know, say they say that you'll hear from them in 1 to 2 months, and 3 months go by, you might want to contact them and say, hey, what the heck's going on? Well, you wouldn't say it that way, but at least you have the information there. And then if your poem is accepted or rejected or whatever piece of writing, you have it on file. And then you also know what you sent to a place. Some places will say no simultaneous submissions or some simultaneous submissions okay. So if you don't know where you're sending a piece and then you mindlessly send it to another place, you know, you could get yourself in trouble in a certain way there. So that's, again, you're kind of managing your artist self, and it's a different kind of hat that it takes to do that. Another thing is I have one file for when things get published or posted online. I copy the URL and the date. I'll keep a record of that. And then there's also the submissions and acceptances, rejections file. This helps me keep a general idea of what's going on and again, how to look back and say, oh yeah, this poem I sent out or was published, so I'm going to go with this one now. Hard copies and on computer, they both have their place. There's a lot of stuff I barely know about, these sort of backups and clouds, places where you can store lots of information online. Personally, if it's something really, really important, I make a point to keep a hard copy. Because, you know, things like Hurricane Sandy remind me, hey, you don't always have access when you want it in case of something like that. So it's up to you how much you want to keep track and keep hard copies, how much the file space takes. And that reminds me of the inspiration for this week's show is because I'm in the process of reorganizing my entire workspace, office space, desk space. There are already like 5 to 10 brown bags of paper ready for the recycling next week. And so I've been going through stuff. Sometimes stuff I've had for 12 or more years. And so my head has not been as much thinking or reading this week. So, hey, let's talk about the clerical, and the importance of that. And the cleaning actually feels good. It helps to kind of hone in on what's essential, stuff that I haven't looked at in years, maybe I don't need, stuff that I haven't looked at but I just want to keep, so I'll shove it in a drawer or wherever. Let's see. Another part of clerical is the encouraging the artist part of you. Ideas, notes, quotes, one-liners, images, factoids. Those are sort of the building blocks, the bread and butter of a writer, you know, catching an idea and then sometimes go right at it, but sometimes it just sits there for a while. So at least if you have that on file, you know, you've got a few spare moments, you can go look at it, and that might trigger a writing a piece, or you have it on file for when you're ready to write the piece. Things are kind of can tend to brew for a while, so you know when that quote or that information about food that you wrote down a bunch of months or weeks or years ago, and then when all of a sudden you're working on a piece on food, you have some access to it. Ray Bradbury talked about his, he just, when he started early in his career, he had a journal full of just titles. He would get, you know, the titles for what would become short stories, maybe novels too, like The Skeleton, The Roller Coaster. So something as simple as that was a trigger for him to release the whole creative process. So it's, you know, it's different for different people. Another one, especially in my experience with essays and occasionally with poems where I've had a kind of informational poem, footnotes and sources. Now, in high school, college, I couldn't stand that stuff, reading a poem and seeing the footnotes. I felt like it always slowed me down and having to keep track of all that stuff. But, you know, I've come to I've come to appreciate it. It is a bit tedious and it is very sort of minutiae and Virgoan. If you're into astrology, Virgoan's like details. So I do actually have a bunch of signs in Virgo, which I attribute to helping me, you know, basically enjoy that process of keeping track of where information is coming from. If I'm quoting somebody, you know, it's sort of a lineage literary thing of honoring something that someone said, whether it could be just a one-liner or a paragraph. Things like United States of Amnesia, that phrase that I enjoy using, that comes from Gore Vidal. So, you know, that feels appropriate to me to pay tribute to him and note that. And also it could turn a reader on to, hey, I like that quote from that guy. I'm going to go check him out. So it helps to promote an ongoing sort of lineage of literati and ideas. And there are technical forms for the footnotes and stuff. You can look that up. I tend to be a lot more looser and not worry. I mean, as long as you get the information on there, it's pretty good as far as I'm concerned. Maybe there's more technical things to do. Certainly doing lots of footnotes for a book gave me a huge appreciation for books like encyclopedias and dictionaries and other writers and scholars who have tons and tons of footnotes. A certain limit to how much I could do that, you know, but once in a while it just fits, especially with essays. I read a lot of the news online, and then when I write up an essay, it tends to be a lot of quotes and they're kind of like a patchwork essay. And so again, it's important for me to have that data on file at some level. The computer does make it easier because even if I don't have it on file, I can search the title or the author and kind of call it up a lot quicker. So whatever method you use, that's good. There's recently a new updating for the Psychiatric Diagnostic Manual, and they listed some absurd new disorders having to do with sort of mood swings, and now little kids could be sort of drugged for having temper tantrums is one thing that's possible. But they mentioned another one called HD, which is hoarding disorder. So that's one to be aware of. You can, you know, watch how much your paperwork, your whatever it is you're working with, whatever art, you know, keep an eye on the hoarding and see what you know, what might actually be useful to you or not useful to you, or something that could be better with somebody else. This is kind of part two being inserted, recording this outdoors. It's a lovely spring day, and first part was talking more from the writer's point of view. After listening to that, realized, whoa, wait a second, I didn't plan this thoroughly, and I gotta add some of the publishing side of things. So there again is an example of clerical, you know, when you really need to be ready and perform things. Otherwise, you know, creates a possible trouble. From an artistic point of view, it's kind of like the spontaneity and flows, and things tend to work that way. But when you get to the clerical side of things, the planning does help. Had that numerous times where I've had a printer print up a proof or something, you know, I've seen a mistake, and I had to learn, okay, what was the mistake I made at home on the computer that I can avoid? One of those things when reviewing a PDF of a file, magnify it like 400%, because sometimes a small mistake won't show up visually, but if you magnify it, then you'll see it. So it was taking the printed copy to see it. So there's lots of little inside technical tricks of the trade kind of thing that you know, takes a while to catch up on. A few things from the publishing side of clerical. A lot of people ask about copyright. I mean, as soon as you write something, technically it is copyrighted. And just putting the little C in the circle with the year and your name is technically copyrighted.
There is a copyright, I think maybe Library of Congress or official copyright you can get if you are really concerned or you have kind of sensitive data and you want to protect it. There's also on the back of books a little barcode that people know as the ISBN number. Now, it's my view on this has changed over the years because when I started publishing, I wanted books to really look, you know, professional. So I got the ISBN numbers, and then you actually buy the barcode is separate. The number goes on the barcode. But over the years, I've used them less and less because essentially they are only useful for like tracking in major stores or if you're selling on Amazon. So it does have a use, but it's also kind of a ripoff in the sense that if you buy one, it's about $115. If you buy 10, it's about $275. If you buy 100, the price per goes down to about 10. So, you know, it's the part that's a ripoff is they're charging an individual $115 for something that a major publisher will get for 10 each. So it's sort of that Staples mass buying mentality, which is great if you, you know, have the use for it and have the money up front. So I tend to avoid the ISBNs unless it's a book that I specifically want to try to get into chain stores, which is hard to do anyway, and or sell on Amazon, which I kind of stopped doing as much. Other parts of clerical, you know, from both the writer and the publisher are proofreading. Spell check is one way, but spell check doesn't always catch everything, so proofreading for that it makes sense and content. You know, especially you sending a poem and something short or a haiku. If somebody sends me that and it's got a typo, I figure, well, hey, they don't really care. They didn't take the time to look this over. So, you know, do that clerical work and it'll make you look a lot better. Editing is also obviously another factor. More on the artistic or publishing side is the graphics. And you know the quality, and that's kind of learning a whole nother language. That is part of being a publisher working with printers is you start to learn a language that they use for different specs and what are called pre-flight, the people that prepare the you know the text for the actual printing, and a lot of times they have measurements and lingo that is you know you have to really kind of get them to slow down and explain it to you. Some are willing to do that more than others. One project that All Books publishes is the Haiku Calendar each year, and that has a ton of data with the holidays and putting in the moon cycles and the sun cycles and the solstices, equinoxes, and that sort of stuff. So that's a lot of specific information and data to keep track of and double, triple, whatever, check. And then the other aspect as a publisher or even if you're just organizing an anthology is the people. You know, whether you have 5, 10, or 100 writers in a book, that takes a bit of corresponding and keeping track and who's responded, who hasn't. It's you know, sort of like planning a party, I guess. But that's, you know, another aspect of the clerical, managerial, keeping track of data and people. Perhaps we'll do a show at some point on rights and permissions because there's a gentleman who I found online that does that, and once in a while I correspond with him, ask him a question about permission to use something. In a nutshell, there's what's called fair use. You can look it up. Usually it's a short, you know, short quote or a few lines is considered fair use, and just giving, you know, mentioning the credit is enough. Sometimes to quote a longer piece or be careful quoting an entire poem, that can be tricky. Just a few lines could be okay, whereas the whole poem could not be okay. So that can require contacting the publisher and asking for permission. And sometimes they'll just say yes and give you credit. Sometimes they'll want to charge you $50 or $100 or lots more. one point for one book used Paul Simon lyrics, and that required a little bit of cash, which was sort of bothered me in the sense that, you know, how many records has Paul Simon sold that he needs to get money for that? But then again, he's paying people to manage his work, and, you know, he doesn't want this stuff to get out there rampantly. So I can see both sides of that. So you got to be prepared to see what's important to you as far as if it's worth paying to have something in your book and the proper citation. So that's kind of a quick overview of you know, the publishing and printing aspect of it. You know, even if you're just doing a PDF sort of newsletter online, again, there's the technical, the clerical, making sure that things are functioning properly and that things look good. That's more the artistic, and then you have your content. So there's a wide range of stuff, and generally have tended to learn as each thing came up and said, oh, I got to do this now, what do I do? So it's kind of a learn as you go process. But no, it's good if you're just starting off or you're doing a new project, it's good to check with some people and ask and find out, you know, any suggestions they might have. Again, that just want to accentuate that thing about the sort of the metaphor that I really learned from looking that up on Wikipedia. It was, you know, something that I was aware of, but it gave me more respect for that sense of a clergy, that clergy spiritual aspect of what an artist does. The clergy reminded me of the monks copying the texts, you know, sitting there at desks, and you think of a lot of the manuscripts and great writings over history, you know, seeing imagining Shakespeare or whoever with the dipping the pen in the ink and how long it took, and, you know, writing without a computer. So there's a sort of temple monk-like quality to that. And then the artwork, like I think it's the Book of Kells, maybe, that has an incredible design. And, you know, back in the time where the capital letter for the first word in the book was a painting, calligraphic picture in itself, and how much time and focus that takes, and how that was sort of like a, you know, really a artwork as devotion and text as kind of prayer. So, you know, as you find the kind of drudgery or the what seems like boring office work that's part of being an artist, especially writer and publisher, it's, you know, it's good to remember that there's a bigger picture to it, and there's also, in a kind of spiritual community, mystical order sense, are known to be keepers of sacred texts and things that maybe don't go out to the public that much, or are kept and then shared with certain people, where it's this person would specifically appreciate this in more of an esoteric way. So there's a variety of ways that the clerical or clergy works. Again, it may not be direct line to writing and publishing, but it is connected with you know, obviously the books and information. So it has that function and that role to share knowledge and recorded wisdoms. And so that's a very respectable function in whatever role you do it. And so, you know, the clerk has its repetitiveness, but again, it's part of the machine, so to speak, of balancing the freewheeling, spontaneous, riffing artist that, you know, sometimes has trouble with the discipline of that. Some people hire people to do that work for them. But however you do it, somebody, you know, at some point you need somebody to help with that level of things. So that about wraps it up. Thanks to the ancient Greeks for adding a bit of depth to what, you know, in modern times seems like a menial thing. I don't know what kind of music to pick to go out with. Just looking up here on YouTube and see something by a group called the Street Clergy. So we'll check this out. Thank you for listening. Have a good one.
Not come to destroy the law or the prophets. We make the teachings true, and by the Christ we will fulfill it. Until heaven and earth pass, we gon' fly first class with the Holy Spirit who teaches and make memories last. Bastard pastors walk to make fall the cross. Never mind their efforts, cause my Yahshua suffers no loss. Even when they giving the gospel for greedy gain, God's word is eternal without any blemish or stain.